Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hello, everyone. This is Mary Lurson, Executive Director of the NAMM Foundation, and your host here at Talking Up Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation, where we explore ideas about music education, music learning, music promotion, and the feel-good life of making and learning music at every age and ability. I'm just thrilled today to have with us the Executive Director and the Marketing Director of the Museum of Making Music, located in Carlsbad, California. Welcome, Carolyn.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mary. We're so happy to be here.
And welcome, BJ Morgan.
Thank you, Mary. Definitely a pleasure.
Did I give your correct titles, BJ? Did I make that a correct title?
I'm happy to be promoted to the marketing director. I'm actually a marketing manager, but marketing is the broad term for what I do here.
Great. And Carolyn, you're the fearless executive director of this wonderful institution located in Carlsbad, California, actually in the ground floor of the NAMM headquarters. Carolyn, give us a little flyover about the Museum of Making Music so we can kind of picture its founded, its mission, its service, and outreach efforts.
Sure. Thank you again for having us. The Museum of Making Music is actually NAMM's museum. So we opened up in the NAMM headquarters on the first floor of NAMM headquarters in Carlsbad, California, back in 1998. And why did we open? We opened in coordination with NAMM's celebration of 100 years of service to the music products industry, so 1901 to 2001. So our museum originally was a centennial celebration of NAMM's work. It originally, when we first opened, was intended for mostly NAMM industry members to come to their industry headquarters and to learn about their own history and reminisce about all of the impact that the industry has had over the last century. Since that time, however, our mission has broadened quite a bit. We opened to the public, actually, a couple years after we opened to the industry. So we opened to the public in March of 2000. BJ and I have actually been at the museum since that time. Along with this opening to the public, our mission broadened as well. And so we celebrate the accomplishments and impact of the music products industry, and we welcome members of the general public into that world, and we inspire them to get hands-on themselves with musical instruments. So we've been there since 1998. That is our mission and our some of the programs that we do in addition to our exhibitions, our permanent exhibitions and special exhibitions. We do a tremendous amount of outreach into our communities. So everything from a band and orchestra program to school tour, field trips, concert series, and many other things that I'm sure we'll get into.
Yeah, it's a very, very busy place. BJ, would you like to add anything more to your outreach efforts? And I know you manage the concert program there.
Well, yeah, we do quite a bit. I mean, Carolyn covered the wide spectrum, the net that we cast out there. We have a volunteer program. We have an adult education program for both orchestra and band. We've done workshops. We've done films. We've done family activities. We've gone to school sites and presented the science of music. We had a series probably about the 5 or 6 year mark where we presented the science of sound in classrooms. And it's an ever evolving array of things that we're able to offer at the museum. Some are only for a limited time and some have persisted throughout the entire course of the museum. Our tour program, our volunteer program, our field trip program, those are things that have a long lasting impact in the community. So they've been core components of the museum experience since we've almost very at the beginning. And both, like Carolyn said, we've both been there for quite a long time. So we have a deep institutional knowledge of the organization and have been around to see it evolve and change over time. And it's been just an amazing journey, an amazing support from the community also for the projects that we do for the community. So it's a reciprocal relationship that we have with not only our immediate community in Carlsbad and Vista Oceanside, Southern California, but that has up until recently been able to stretch beyond those boundaries out into a wider audience.
And we'll talk about that in terms of the realities of the stay-at-home requirements. But I would say you both have certainly been part of the impetus to lead this museum forward. I mean, it's really required a wonderful vision and dedication from both of you. So just want to acknowledge that too. You know, you probably are in a place you never imagined 20 years ago. When we were going to have just a nice little industry museum, right?
That's exactly right. What it has grown into, it's amazing.
And how many people do you serve annually? It's quite an impressive number.
So right now, I believe we're up at around 45,000 people a year that come through the museum. What's interesting, I think, about that is that we have experienced a very steady growth, you know, not an exponential growth over the last 20 years, but a growth that is very comfortable and encouraging. So it's the steady, strong growth of members. Each year we increase a little bit. We flattened out a little bit in 2008, but after that we started creeping up again. I know we'll talk a little bit more about the future of the museum coming up, but that is what has given us a really strong a lot of confidence and given us a strong foundation moving forward.
Yeah, it's just a really lovely environment with history, as you know, historical instruments, the history of music retail, you know, photos, large photo murals, just remarkable interactivity. It's like all the traditional elements of a museum and all the modern elements of a museum. And I know you're headed into even more of that.
For those that are in the museum field or museum aficionados or museum goers, it's interesting to be a museum about music, something that exists in time. You know, how do you present something that exists in time in a physical space? So just a philosophical comment there.
Well, you do it very well. And just to kind of give you a picture, this is in a two-story building in the ground floor of the NAM headquarters. And there's a staff of about 60, 65 that are at the NAM headquarters. And I go to headquarters occasionally. I work in an East Coast office. But, you know, to be upstairs in a meeting and an elementary school is gathering for a drum circle or a field trip is having their lunch outside in front of the museum. It's just really, really, really inspiring to be in a business environment where your vision and your mission for the world is operating, you know, basically right there every day.
So that's right.
You really enliven that. So that goes to the question I wanted to ask is, you know, ultimately, the museum is serving a really important and vast audience of adults and students and children and families and visitors from really all over the world are coming through Southern California. It's on one of the destinations going through the area. You know, and now you do these wonderful temporary exhibits. You have a permanent collection. You have these public programs. But I got kind of always sense that there's something that you're really driving at here. You're trying to ignite something within people. You're trying to set something ablaze in people. You know, what is that?
I can talk about it from my personal perspective, and BJ probably has something that he's trying to set ablaze as well. But personally, let me say, my personal goal is that everybody should feel like they have a right to belong in the world of music. Not only do they have a right, there is a place for them. I believe that everybody can enter this world in their own way at any age, and everybody belongs here. For some odd reason, and I'm not quite sure why, I went through many years in my life where I felt that I wasn't worthy of being in the world of music for whatever reasons that was for. You know, that music was so special to me, so important to this world that I actually couldn't find my way in. You know, I'd knocked on so many different doors. You know, I just couldn't get in. until I started working at this museum and I realized there's an entire industry opening doors for me to get in. And there are many, many paths and many roads. You don't have to be a professional, excellent musician to belong in this world. So that's my personal mission, that everybody who leaves this museum is ignited to find their place in the world of music.
So it's really kind of a yes, you can jumping off place.
Absolutely. And it doesn't have to be playing music. It could be a photographer, a writer, a owner of a music store, a designer, an engineer of musical instruments. It's a vast world.
Yeah. How about you, BJ? What are you seeking to set ablaze?
You know, I definitely share the same sentiment. It may be that, yes, it's not only realizing that there's a place. I actually had the epiphany a little bit earlier in my career, because the two paths most students would kind of figure moving forward. I was a kid in high school. I love music. I've been playing music throughout my youth growing up, got in the school band. And I'm like, I want to continue to do this somehow. But the only two paths that seemed available at the time was I could either be a performer, which I realized I didn't have the confidence or the what I felt were the chops necessary to continue that path forward. And it was not the type of career path that is built upon a solid ground sometimes. You know, I was under that impression as a kid. Or I could be a music educator. And hats off to all the educators out there. They make a huge difference. But I didn't feel like that was a viable path for me because I didn't feel like I had the depth of patience necessary to be an educator. So I was panicking that I would not be able to maintain any form of musical activity, music moving forward, that would be a prominent part of my life, until a friend of mine, one of our drumline instructors, he's like, oh yeah, you should check out this program at Indiana State, is where I went to school. It was a music business program. I'm like, and it was an epiphany. I'm like, music business. Oh my goodness. I had no idea this world existed. I had no idea that there was thousands of options beyond just the surface performance education routes that were available. So as soon as I caught a glimpse of the industry side of music, the retail, the manufacturing, it just opened up an entirely new world of possibilities. And that I echo that from some of our supporters at the Museum of Making Music, Kenyatta primarily, who was the initial credit behind that statement. And it was just unfathomable, like where you could go with this. So even before I knew that the museum, well, it was even before the museum actually existed, but when I completed my coursework and came to Carlsbad to do my internship at NAMM, then it was a whole new opportunity to see like all the different components that were available. And then to actually have a museum whose storyline existed to present this wide, wide universe of possibilities, it was fascinating. So that, for me, that's the spark. If you can bring in somebody who has no knowledge that this whole world exists and contextualize it within something that they're familiar with and hopefully love. You know, I haven't met a person I know yet who doesn't enjoy music, but being able to connect these worlds, the emotional side of music, the playing of music with the underpinnings of everything that happens to come together to bring that to a moment of something we all can connect to. For me, that's the goal. That's really what we strive to do, or at least personally, what I'm hoping people walk away with when they come to the museum is this understanding that, you know, yes, there's so much activity, so many things that come together in order to create a moment in time where we all can come together. And yes, you do have a place within it, be it an observer, a participant, or someone who makes an instrument, who brings that instrument to the musicians themselves, or the musicians who are creating the music, or the listeners who are, you know, enjoying the music on a personal level. So that is kind of my take on what really, the museum has a profound effect on our communities.
And you're doing it so very, very well, as evidenced just by the great following you have and the rooms and the galleries and the activities that that are ongoing there every day. I mean, it's a thoroughfare. It's really great. So let's be honest here. A museum is a place that you one chooses to visit You know, it's the threshold. You walk through a door and you've created an experience. But now we're all staying at home for a few weeks. And you all had just turned on a dime and have done something that makes sure that your audience and the wider community is really connecting for the nurturing quality of music now too, right? And connecting. So tell us what the Museum of Making Music is kind of created overnight and what you're doing.
Well, overnight is not an overstatement. It literally was, I think, from a Friday to a Monday that we pivoted, the key word that we're all talking about these days. And Vijay was the major force behind this. Let me just start micro. We have a volunteer program. We've got 65 volunteers at the museum that we need to keep engaged. So we got all of them online and started a online volunteer program. We're going to be doing an online volunteer training throughout the summer. So that's one. We also have a band and orchestra program. And I'm sure many of the listeners out there know of the challenges that we face in terms of trying to play in an ensemble format online. So not being able to play together in real time, we've pivoted on those programs and created a variety of ways that we interact, from lectures to guest speakers to masterclass formats to video exchanges, etc. And then I guess thirdly, and where I think Vijay will have some great insights, we created a program called Mom at Home. And it started off 3 days a week at a certain time of day. We meet our visitors in an online format and present a variety of programs. So BJ, maybe you want to talk about some of the direction that we've taken with Mom at Home.
Sure, absolutely. There was no doubt that we needed to create something or to be able to host some type of content, activity, engagement, community for our visitors and our guests and our supporters that could no longer physically come to the museum. So the seed was planted from a webinar the very first week we were adapting to work from home, which would have been the week just following March 13th is when we all started our work from home initiative. And to kind of stay engaged with the rest of the world and the rest of our colleagues, our museum nonprofit organizations, there was a webinar hosted by CUZM. And in there, they said, don't be afraid to get dirty. Now is the time to engage. And now is the time to, you know, continue to reach your audiences. And as a voracious consumer of podcasts myself, I was like, oh, we have a really cool opportunity. I know just enough to be dangerous. Let's go ahead and present something that we can have regularly, a touch point where we can engage, which that the engagement focus of that was the whole reason we decided to settle on a live video stream so that we could have chat back and forth with our audiences. And we have the museum is a repository of all the specialized information about the industry, about instruments. Well, we have great connections with artists, with other contributors that your general audience doesn't normally have access to. So we wanted to be able to bring that, to continue to bring that kind of that concert experience or that gathering experience of what we're able to produce on a regular basis, but, you know, make it a little bit more bite-sized, make it a little bit more fine-tuned, but still provide that institutional expertise that only the Museum of Making Music can offer.
And now you're offering it every day, right?
No, we're still doing 3 days a week.
Only 3 days a week.
Only three days a week. It's a bit of an undertaking. You know, we do boast a small staff here at the Museum of Making Music, and it is a bit of an undertaking. We did start off really, really rough and gritty at the beginning, and fine-tuning as we go along, learning every day, every experience that we present, we learn a little bit more how to proceed in a little bit more smoother fashion. And, you know, I've gotten really comfortable with it. And now, you know, we continue to assess. We want to make sure that we are presenting something that is valuable to our audiences, is meaningful to our audiences, and still carries our message forward. That beacon for the importance of music making and the story of the industry, we want to carry that forward, you know, fulfill our purpose.
BJ brings up an interesting point. We are perfectionists by nature at the museum. I think all of us on staff are. And this was one situation where we had to get over our perfectionism and just say, we just got to do it. Let's just do it. And so when he said we're kind of nitty, you know, gritty at the beginning, we just hopped online and we pulled the people closest to us and said, let's do a program on this. Let's do a program on this. I interviewed, you know, our orchestra conductor, and we just jumped in and learned a lot, you know, in the process. But it was kind of refreshing to just, wow, you know, we've got a lot of leeway right now. We just have to keep connected, even if it isn't perfect. And I really applaud our staff for being willing to do that. And then little by little, now, you know, we're do a little more preparation and have a little bit, you know, better presentation and little, but it's been a fascinating and inspiring process to do it.
That's great. A little less improv, right? A little bit more structure, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
I'd love to hear what your audience numbers are, who you're reaching, and how this is kind of supplementing and augmenting your footprint and how people are learning about you and what they know about you.
Our audience is, it's almost in line with our typical museum goer. It's folks who have a interest in music still. And we've had a core constituency join us for almost every single mom at home, which is some of our dedicated supporters, dedicated volunteers. There's, I know individuals there who are, I see them regularly at a museum concert event, and they're always, you know, those strong banner bearing patrons who support the museum and help carry us forward. And then also on the opposite side of that is when we started developing the family oriented content, the musical story times. So we have constituency of people I know and have reached out to in the Midwest who are there all the time, and younger audiences too, who are reaching it back to us when we do a presentation like, oh, you know, my son is, he's so interested in strings. Can you do something about strings? And we're like, yes, let's start planning about strings. So we're reaching those audiences who we wouldn't normally be able to reach at the museum level, you know, people from Atlanta or people from New Zealand now who are connecting with us that way and giving us great feedback about the content that they're enjoying and what we can, you know, do moving forward. So it's exciting. It's definitely exciting for us.
And I think it'd be a great supplement to the realities of what schools and school curriculum are needing now. I bet you're a great supplement to that.
Well, yeah, we're starting. Yeah, that's our next little module is to start doing virtual tours. We did one tour already for Cal State San Marcos here up in North County, San Diego, and that was a wonderful success. So we're building on that and then also expanding out to the elementary grades as well.
So do you think that when we're, quote unquote, back to normal, when the museum may be receiving visitors again, that the supplemental online experience might have its own legs again? Do you think you're feeling a new benefit from this outreach?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. No question about it. We've created a whole new pathway to reach people. This will definitely continue on. It might morph a little bit in terms of, you know, content and direction and frequency, but it will certainly continue.
I definitely agree with that, especially once we have more available resources to it than just what's available here in my own personal space. When we have the resources that we contain in the museum space available, easily accessible to us, then it's going to continue to be an important way for us to reach those wider audiences, but also it will enable us to do a deeper presentation as well.
That's great. Well, one suggestion I'll leave you with is that you need to have industry presidents, CEOs, and industry icons come on and read student storybooks. I know there's several people I'd love to hear read Tubby the Tuba, right?
You know, we had just a few days ago, we were talking about bringing industry luminaries onto our program, but we hadn't talked about it within the context of reading a story. So, oh my gosh, we love that.
I think that's the sweet spot here. They could talk about alternative tunings for guitar till the cows come home, but hearing them read A Good Night Moon, I think that's the...
Right. Or we have a book in our museum store called Henry the Steinway. I can think of a few people who might be great narrators for that story.
Yeah. And wouldn't we just love to see them in that context too? In addition to the future, you know, dual programming realities that you've seen the benefit, the unintended benefit of this time, right? To move so quickly into an online programming. And when the beautiful museum is welcoming visitors again, there's something very exciting ahead for the museum. Carolyn, what's ahead for the museum?
My heavens, I'm so happy you asked that question. We have spent a lot of time and energy pivoting to this online format, and the other 50%, 60% of our time and energy is being focused on working on our complete renovation of the museum project. We are in the middle of redesigning our museum, reorganizing the storyline, updating the technology, and increasing the interactivity of our museum, of the Museum of Making Music. We're going to be reorganizing the way we tell our story. Currently, we are organized in a chronological manner, which made perfect sense 20 years ago when we were a celebration of NAMM Centennial. So we took 100 years and the original designer, Sherry West, designer and director, did an incredible job at celebrating 100 years of industry history. Since that time has marched on. So the Centennial storyline is a little bit out of date. So we're going to reorganize that story and tell it from the perspectives of making musical instruments and products. What were the drivers of change over the last 100, 150 years? Why have instruments changed or not changed? How have they changed? And how has that impacted the music that we make, as well as our own culture and society? That will be our first gallery, all about making the instruments. The second gallery will be all about the business of music. How do people connect to musical instruments? Where do we find them? How could we get an instrument in 1900? And how is that different today? What were the drivers of change in the world of music retail over the last 100, 150 years? Fascinating look at history, economics, politics, and how the world has developed and how the retail environment and the retail distribution channels have changed based on the changing world around us. And then the third gallery will be all about using the instruments, the inspiration, the pivotal times in music history that have changed our world, the products that have changed our world. So it's making the instruments, selling the instruments, getting connected to the instruments, and then using the instruments. How is our world enhanced by it? So that's our new structure. We have a timeline. We will actually be starting construction, demolition of a few walls this summer, and then starting construction in the fall. And we will reopen fresh and new in early 2021.
Just when everyone is truly ready to get back and experience cultural and local resources again.
We expect a big celebration, let me tell you.
And BJ, you've got 1,001 ideas ready to implement around that new outreach around that new plan.
10,001. Yeah. Yeah. It's an exciting time, and it will definitely give us a lot more content. We're going to be bursting with content to be able to share out there with everyone.
You two and your team at the Museum of Making Music and all of our NAMM staff and NAMM Foundation staff, I think I look back at the last few weeks and, it's like a one day you were handed a bucket of lemons and the next day you were out making lemonade for the world. And your work at the museum is certainly a great example of that. Do you feel that in this time, and this is kind of in the category of final thoughts, that people are turning to music in ways that maybe it aligns with that lighting the fire and setting a blaze goal that you have? Do you think people are finding this time to turn to music in a different and new way?
I think more so now than ever. I don't know if you share the sentiment, Carolyn, but even just in places that you wouldn't expect to see music being represented. This is just a weird, maybe it's a weird bias that I've noticed, but every time I am on Google or every morning when I fire up my web browser and Google is the first thing I see, there's always an icon for music in their Google Doodle. I'm like, that is amazing that it's always present there. And especially, I have a lot of friends and colleagues who are musicians, and they have just been presenting live music not in this format we're used to, where we're able to gather in a concert space or whatnot, but they're still sharing that music, and it has become a place for friends and neighbors who are not able to gather together currently, but still that sense of community is always there when they're presenting live on whatever streaming platform they are. If it's a social media like Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, whatever platforms are available, when they're there and they have gathered 100 other friends together, you still feel that sense of community around them. And it's, I think that's something I've noticed that has really just been amazing to see, that music is this connecting force. And it has, in my mind and my own personal observations, just been stronger than ever, really to help bring us together through whatever challenges we face. You know, whenever that happens, that it always bubbles to the surface that music and making music and sharing that visceral experience is so important in bringing us together and continuing to help us move forward.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Music has played a major role in this new reality, haven't you found? I mean, it's just, it is always front and center. The other side of that, I think it has really, I know it firsthand from our band and orchestra programs, it has also driven home the absolute need for people to connect and make music in person. I do see a level of, maybe it's frustration, maybe it's sadness, maybe it's, there's, people are desperate to play together, to be back together in person to play. And it's a hard situation right now, but I think it has just made people realize how essential it is for us to communicate as human beings through music, and the importance of that person-to-person interaction and sharing of the musical language.
So well said, both of you. I think that part of what we're working on now in terms of our advocacy effort is that the ensemble experience for a while may look a little bit different, but the need to connect and the opportunity to connect will be stronger than ever. I think the museum might want to start its chamber music program where people can still play together, but maybe a little more space in between each other. But that North County Strings Carillon is going to be more powerful than ever, I think.
Oh, it certainly is, let me tell you.
I can't thank you both for everything that you've done for the NAMM community and this remarkable pivot that you've made to have the Museum of Making Music online. Where can anyone find you to make sure that they're staying ahead and staying current with all that you're offering?
Museumofmakingmusic.org.
Just spell it out there, right? If you can spell museum and making music, you'll find you. So we hope everyone listening does that. So I want to thank so much our guests here talking at Music Education, BJ Morgan and Carolyn Grant of the Museum of Making Music. Thank you so much for joining us, both of you.
Thank you, Mary, so much for having us.
Thanks, Mary.
Thanks. And thanks to all of you for listening to this episode of Talking at Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L-N-A-M-M.